Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Apparently, enforcing drug laws are racist. This is an old partisan position that is now redefining a debate in Seattle, and that is what's trending.
What's trending? The drug crisis.
The Seattle Times has an incredibly race-obsessed, identity-obsessed columnist who is out with another hot take. In this case, condemning Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison for wanting to enforce drug laws. There is a vote tomorrow at the Seattle City Council. And it's a vote on her proposal to prosecute drug use and possession in the city. Because right now, based on city code, drug crimes would go to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. But if drug possession is a gross misdemeanor now, which is the position from the state, it should go, I think, she thinks, many people think, it should go to Davison's office because the Seattle City Attorney's Office, city attorney's offices, they handle misdemeanors. But she would need a change in the city code for that to happen. Now, in the Seattle Times, Naomi Ishisaka, she is calling this whole idea racist. It's racist. Because the war on drugs is racist. Because the criminal justice system is racist. Everything, of course, is racist. And she repeats this often used but always incorrect assertion in this column. She says, quote, criminalizing our way out of substance use disorder has never worked and won't work this time either. Huh. Then, of course, it goes on to quote some activist who harkens back to the 80s and the 90s and the racist war on drugs. She writes, Brandy Flood, who's the director of community justice for the REACH program at Evergreen Treatment Services. Brandy Flood worries the drive to criminalize will lead us back to an era of the 80s and 90s drug policies where the most marginalized, black and brown people, will again be hurt the most. And then, of course, it moves on to promoting harm reduction strategies, which do not work, but we're supposed to pretend it does, because they quote someone who is a proponent of harm reduction and says it works. Of course, we know that the data is pretty clear on this. I don't care what study you want to claim, although not directly cite in this column. We've seen the results of harm reduction. Harm reduction as a strategy means we, quote unquote, reduce the harm associated with illicit substance abuse. So rather than ban the use of a drug and enforce that ban, rather than push people into treatment, we give them a clean needle. We give them a crack or fentanyl pipe. We give them the tools that they would use to, quote unquote, safely or much safer engage in this ultimately destructive and deadly behavior. Now, they will have you believe that this push from Ann Davison and two Seattle City Council members, Alex Peterson and Sarah Nelson, the only two sane ones on the council, they'll have you believe that this is all about jailing people. That the reason why Ann Davison wants to take this up is she wants to throw addicts in jail. It's not true. That's not what this is actually about. This is about getting people in treatment. This is about leveraging jail time to get people into treatment, because when you tell them, they can have a choice. Continue to use this drug that they are addicted to, can't get over. Or suffer no consequences whatsoever. They're going to choose the first one. Continue to lean into this addiction because they don't know any better. That's part of the addiction. They desperately need help. And sometimes you need to leverage the threat of jail to get them to say yes. But when you know you're not going to be arrested, when you know you're not going to suffer any legal consequences, you just continue to use until ultimately you kill yourself. Nothing in this column in today's Seattle Times by Naomi Ishisaka, nothing at all is offered to help deal with this crisis. No solutions. Just throw more money into things we're already doing and are not working. Just give them more money. That's all you get from this piece. But you know what they often ignore when talking about the war on drugs? They talk about, of course, it led to incarcerating black and brown people, quote unquote. It's true. It did. Also white people, but disproportionality arguments, which are lazy, they use. That's true. You know what it also did that they're just completely ignoring in the context of the drug crisis that's leading to fatal overdoses? Fewer black and brown people died of a fatal overdose. That was also a result of the quote-unquote war on drugs. You can believe that over-incarceration around drug use is wrong, is unhelpful, which I generally believe, while simultaneously saying the criminal justice system has to play a role in all of this. It's not the only role that's played, the only tool that's used. It's got to be a part of it. But there are folks on the left, and Naomi Ishisaka falls into this category, who believe that the criminal justice system is never the right thing. Ever, ever, ever. It is systemically racist. It's a remnant of our white supremacist past. Insert all the silly partisan talking points. And you get the argument coming from the left, the radical left. I don't think your average Democrat views this issue as all that controversial. I don't even think the average Seattle Democrat views this as controversial. I think most people can say, yeah, we don't want to push people into jail, but if we need to, if that's the only way that we can get someone into treatment, or if that's the only thing we can do to get someone to stop constantly breaking the law and creating victims out of everybody else, okay, then we're going to have to do that. I think most people, Democrat, Republican, independent, the I don't know what I am's, I think generally they hold that position. It's the radical voices who are often the loudest, who unfortunately have the ears of the council members, not because they are loud and intimidating, but because they have shared values. You already had Tammy Morales, the socialist, and Lisa Herbold, the grandma with the nose ring, as Tucker Carlson liked to call her, to the point where I actually thought that that was something she used at one point during her campaign. Turns out, no, Tucker made that up, and I loved it, and I went with it. They've already come out and said, hard pass. That was actually a direct quote from Tammy Morales in enforcing drug laws and going with Ann Davison's plan. Hard pass. The only thing that maybe can play a role in tomorrow's vote is the fact that you do have some council members in Dan Strauss, Andrew Lewis, running for re-election. And they know that this vote will either help or hurt their re-election campaign. Because if they vote against this, they know people like me and people like you will be reminding folks in Seattle, the ones who are sick and tired of the direction of the city, the ones who are sick and tired of dead people on our streets from overdoses. We're going to remind them of this vote. We know as a matter of fact that law enforcement can play a role in helping people. Go into Spokane, who after the state law was passed, they didn't wait to enforce what they were going to do because they were one of those cities that already passed a local ordinance on drug use in public. Now, ultimately, July 1st is when the state law goes into effect, which turns the possession into a gross misdemeanor. But they've already been enforcing. 60 people have been cited or arrested for using in public in the city of Spokane. And as the Spokane police went about their enforcement, they made a point not to just simply put on handcuffs and throw people in jail and forgetting about them. They went a step further.
So are you aware of the new ordinance in the city regarding drug usage? You're being cited for use of a controlled substance in the public, okay? So community court is all about trying to get people help.
This is about trying to get people help. They, of course, have to accept it. And when you are threatening them with potential jail time because they realize the law has changed, and in this case, it was a 7-0 vote by the council, a council that is not a right-wing council. In fact, I believe the last time I checked, the makeup is more liberal than conservative. But they realize what's going on. When you get in front of someone who is not so far gone, you can actually change the direction of their lives.
Would you like to get clean?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I would.
Okay, that's something we can help you with. I mean, we have lots of resources here.
You say you want to get clean. That's a quick way to get a cop off your back. right? That's a quick way to just, yeah, of course. And then you're hoping that the cop just goes easy on you and says, okay, I'll let this one slide. Only to find that same addict dead of an overdose a week and a half later. But in this case, great. Great. You said you're willing to take us up on our offers? Okay. If you don't, we're going to throw you in jail. Just FYI. Now there are actual teeth to our actions as cops. This is the right thing, which of course means it's going to be an uphill battle in Seattle. You have too many people who think like Naomi Ishizaka, and the radical left in the city of Seattle has completely taken over. Unless everyone else organizes around them. Unless everyone else steps up and says enough is enough. And you don't have to wait until election time to do it. You can start right now by being that one person who makes that one phone call to that one lawmaker, spending just 1 minute with them, telling them on this one issue where it is you stand and what your expectations are. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow if I were a betting man, which weirdly I am. I don't know why I say if I were a betting man. I play blackjack all the time when I go to Vegas.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you do well?
Sometimes and sometimes okay. I don't. As a betting man, I would bet tomorrow goes against Ann Davison, goes against sound policy, because that's unfortunately the city that we still live in. And a vote like that impacts everybody else. You know, you think it stays in Seattle. It doesn't. I've been proud that cities have been doing the opposite of Seattle in this regard. But understand the chaos of downtown Seattle impacts all the communities in King County. Sometimes get into Snohomish County and Pierce County. What's coming up in a couple weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? What is it? When's the All-Star game?
Yeah, July 9th or something.
Right.
Something like that.
That's good for the region, correct?
Yeah.
It's not just good for Seattle.
Economic impact.
It's good for the region. Absolutely. People are excited. People are talking about the area. Let's say that there's a run on hotel rooms. Maybe they go out of Seattle a little bit because I imagine the price is probably through the roof. They're already through the roof for some weird reason. It's crazy expensive to get a hotel in Seattle. It's almost at New York prices, which is just absurd. What are you guys doing over there? So maybe they go and stay in Bellevue. Maybe they go and they've got friends, the people are coming in Tacoma, and they stay there. They go to the All-Star game, but then they go hang out with their friends. This is good for everyone. Except when you get a whole bunch of people who show up in downtown for the first time coming to Seattle, and they see fentanyl smoking all over the place. Not a great look. And those people are less likely to come back. Major League Baseball, less likely to come back. It was funny, I saw this tweet from Brandi Cruz. And she made a point of this community cleanup event on June 23rd from 9 to noon. It starts at T-Mobile Park. And it says, Seattle Mariners, Seattle Metro Chamber, and Together Washington invite you to get the city ready for the big baseball event coming up, because I don't think they can legally say the All-Star game, maybe. Meet at Mariners Parking Plaza at 9 a.m. for a kickoff community celebration with refreshments provided. And her tweet was, Seattle is so bad, they're asking for volunteers to clean up the downtown area before the All-Star game. Think about that for a second. It's so bad that it's the Mariners who are asking for help. You would expect the city to do this, and there's no doubt they're doing some work, including all of a sudden, you'll start to see some pop-up retail shops in Pioneer Square in what a week and a half ago had a bunch of boards on it, couldn't even see into it. It was boarded up, completely abandoned, and all of a sudden, some cool, trendy new shops, which will be open for ESPN or whomever, Fox, whoever's hosting the game, to get some B-roll. Some dude walking into an organic ice cream shop, the ice creamery. It's going to be one of those things. I'll have the rose lavender scoop, please, with a side of organic honey, the kind where the pollen's still in it.
Probably costs like $14.
$14? Are you nuts? It's $23 a scoop.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, inflation, man. I thought that was kind of funny and sad because you know that the city is going to do some of the work. I still want to know where these people are going to go because of all the you usually push them into Pioneer Square. If let's say this was an event happening in the South Lake Union neighborhood. Yeah, you push them into downtown and and Pioneer Square because they're already there in droves. I'd love to know where they're going. If all of a sudden, breaking news story, Burien is overrun with the homeless again. We'll know exactly. If it happens right around the All-Star game, yeah, we'll know where they came from.
Yeah, well, and what are these volunteers going to do? What is Joe Q Mariners fan going to do with such and such smoking fentanyl outside the stadium?
Well,
what are the volunteers
up with trash? There's lots of trash everywhere. It does.
That seems too easy, though.
Well, how hard is it supposed to be for them? They're volunteers.
Well, I understand, but I mean, is cleaning up the trash really the problem? Is what I'm getting at.
It is a piece of the problem.
Okay.
Is it the largest? No, of course not. I think that's when everyone's hoping, yeah, the city just go take care of that junkie over there. Just go push him down closer to don't do the waterfront because we just redid it. Just put him in Northgate. Put him in Lake City. That's what they're thinking. That's the sad part. Or just put him more into the International District. They've been doing that a lot anyway. And let's be honest, there's no tourists going into the CID, right?
No. I feel bad, honestly, for people that are coming in from out of town. Because, I mean, are you truly going to Google what's going on in the neighborhood where you picked your hotel for your weekend trip?
Most people will stay in downtown Seattle. It's my guess. And I imagine the 2 miles between Pike Place Market and the stadium, you'll get a nice little bit of cleanup. That's my guess. They're going to give them the presidential treatment. With President Biden, when he visited, there was just a small amount of space that you needed to clean up because you knew the route he was taking. So you were just very specific in where you would clean up. But with them, same thing. You kind of know the general route. And you know where people are going to stay. So just focus there.
Well,
it's larger than what we did with the president, but it's still easy to map out.
Well, yeah, we covered that a couple of weeks ago, right? The city even said they made reference to kind of that pathway or that, you know, route to the ballpark, right? Didn't they make reference to that? Being intentional about cleaning up that specific area?
Let's just see what they do. You're going to need a lot of paint if you're going to cover up the graffiti. I mean, just even when you think of the non-human element, like when we're not talking about the homeless addict or the mentally ill person screaming an obscenity at the top of his lungs for 12 hours straight.
I saw a good one of those yesterday.
Oh, I had one a few weeks ago right before Amazon fully came in, and he was screaming the worst word you can use when describing a lady in an offensive way for at least an hour and a half. At least an hour and a half.
That's pretty good.
At the top of his lungs, and it started around because I was up at the time. I think I was dressed at the time. So it was about 7-ish a.m., 7:30, just at the top of his lungs.
Were you just enjoying a cup of coffee on your patio or something?
I was trying to spot where he was.
Could you hear it from inside?
100. Well, I had my window open.
Okay. I was curious at
the volume. I could definitely hear it. I couldn't spot him. And then when I went out and I got to the office, when I was walking to the office, that's when I spotted him. It turned out he wasn't home. It was actually an Amazon employee.
Oh, wow.
He just didn't want to go back into the
office. Oh, yeah, they're whiny.
Push the button.
What's trending on the road?
Speaking of homeless, of which I'm sure this story is not connected to whatsoever, there was another incident of a rock being thrown at a car driving on I-5 in South Seattle. A driver happened to have a dash cam recorder going, which is a new trend I'm noticing on Twitter.
Yeah, who has these things?
I don't know why they're doing it, but they talk about just being miserable in traffic all the time because people are just cutting you off left and right, and you're seeing crazy things all the time. You're at the point where you're going to film it and post it on Twitter. I love it. Thank you for posting it. But it is all of a sudden people are doing this. So a dude was driving. He has his dash cam on. And you could see in the video, it actually happened Saturday night about 11 p.m. or so. You can see a man stepping onto the right lane, the farthest right lane, throw a rock directly at this driver. And it's like, it's a big rock. It's almost, it looked a little bit more maybe than a softball or about a softball sized rock. It gets embedded in the windshield. As this guy is driving, he, thank God, was not injured. He spoke with Kara 7 TV.
I thought he going to jump front of car. I honk him. I slow down as much as I can. I mean, it's really shocking. I can't explain.
The fact that he was able to continue to drive and not just swerve or hit the brakes or something, because I don't know. I don't think anyone knows how they'll react if that were to happen to them. particularly when you're going, there was no traffic. He was going probably 60, 70, I mean, probably 80 miles per hour. But he was driving pretty quickly, as you would at night when there's no cars around. And you're obviously not expecting someone to throw a rock at you. I suppose in this case, because the guy was out in public, like he wasn't hiding behind brush, he was out in the open, it made it a little bit easier.
His target is right here to hit the driver. So because I just squeezed my car a little or slowed down, so that's why it goes there.
So let's play guess if it's a homeless man with untreated mental illness and maybe an addiction crisis. King 5 says there's been no suspect identified in this rock throwing incident. The Washington State Patrol received another report of an unknown male with a broom in the area. Investigators have not connected if the man was the same suspect. I'm going to go with, because if this was not a freeway, I would maybe say drunk.
Sure.
Right? Just depends on where it is. Maybe it's near Bellevue Community College or Evergreen. If it was Evergreen, they'd probably throw glitter or something. But I mean, you get my point that there's some context associated with it all. This one, I'm going to go with homeless. Like all the other ones.
I think that
will this checks out. Will this be the shocking twist? This is the one time it's not a homeless person. I love that we even have to pretend that it's not a homeless person. Well, we don't know. We only report the facts. We don't know what we don't know. Don't you know? Yeah, I know. I'm just saying I'm willing to bet it's a homeless person. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. When we come back, oh, The View got very awkward when Tim Scott showed up to set TV's dumbest and most miserable lawyer, Sonny Hostin. He set her to task. We'll play you the audio when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. The View had on Tim Scott today, and obviously they're talking a lot about the election, and they started off the conversation before Tim Scott actually got out there about the fall heard around the world. And it's just been, I think we covered this on Friday, just I am amused by the amount of media coverage focused on why it's not a big deal, which, if I'm being honest, aside from the fact that I'm amused by it, it still shows the image of Joe Biden falling. And as much as, you know, Joe Scarborough and pretty much everyone on CNN, as much as they want to say it's not that big of a deal, every time they remind people about it, it becomes a big deal. It doesn't matter what they're saying. It doesn't matter that they're saying it's not that big of a deal. What matters is every single person understands that Joe Biden is 112 years old and there is a serious and completely reasonable and legitimate concern about whether or not, if reelected, he will live for the entire second term. It is a valid question and it's a valid concern. When the left and the right had the exact same conversation around John McCain when he ran for president, I think that that was also reasonable. Now, is everyone going to talk about it in a reasonable way? No. Not everyone's going to be reasonable in talking about it, but bringing it up, I think, is reasonable. Now, of course, from The View, every single one of them just absolutely loves Joe Biden. And it started with Alyssa Farah, the pretend conservative. And I hate this line. And it's just such a lame joke. I tripped 3 times today just getting out of bed. It happens to the best of us. Shut up. Just stop that. You didn't trip 3 times today. And by the way, if you literally tripped 3 times today before getting out of bed, you should go see a doctor immediately. Something's wrong with you. Sure, do people trip from time to time? Yes. Does it take on a different meaning when you're 80-something years old and you've expressed concerning comments in defiance of maybe what normal people would expect you to speak out as? It's just, come on, what are we pretending?
Well, it's not a singular incident either.
He fell off the bike. He fell upstairs. How do you fall upstairs? But that's what he did. So here's Whoopi pretending it's not that big of a deal.
I guess my question, if he's doing his job, if he's getting stuff done, What's the problem? Yeah, people fall down. I believe he tripped. But,
yeah,
you know, I'm just...
Didn't he reply something like I was sandbagged?
Yeah,
it was a sandbag that he tripped on. Yeah.
But what is this obsession? People are just... I mean, I've known old people all my life.
Just real quick, Whoopi, in all of the years that you've known old people, have they ever shown to age in a way that gets you concerned about their well-being? And of the people who you've been around who've gotten to be very old, at any point did you say you're concerned that they can't care for themselves? I imagine so. I think every single human being who knows older people and have seen them age. At some point, you do this with your parents or your grandparents, where you're like, yeah, it's getting to that time. It's normal. That's how our bodies and brains work. We are good for X amount of years. Everyone's a little bit different. But generally, you start to see the cognitive decline in your 70s-ish, sometimes way earlier. And obviously, the older you get, the more significant the decline. You've never experienced an elderly person who went through some kind of cognitive decline, not even a little bit, not even just a little tiny bit. Now, if the answer is, if you're being honest, you'll say yes, of course. Okay, well, imagine them being in charge of the entire world, which is effectively what the president is in charge of, because that's the impact that the president would have. Would you be comfortable with that? Of course not. So why do we pretend? And again, I remember all of the footage, and you can just Google Donald Trump and glass of water or Donald Trump and ramp. There was a ton of stories all questioning his health. Why was that okay? Oh, because you don't like Donald Trump and you like Joe Biden? Or you want to do what you can to defend a Democrat? Come on.
And I've never seen this kind of obsession with,
never?
You know, people being
old. Years ago.
What the hell? Because everybody's getting there.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the point, dummy. God bless her heart.
What did any of that mean?
Everyone's getting... What does that even mean? Everyone's getting there. Yes, I know. Thank you. We got it. You do know that things come with age, yes? Wisdom. Oh, shut up. I tripped 3 times today. No, you didn't.
I mean, there's a way to approach this with a small amount of compassion for someone that's aging, but
sure.
It's also reasonable to be concerned about the state of the leader of our country.
But we're not supposed to acknowledge that there's a potential issue, that an issue can even happen. We're supposed to pretend, ironically, given her statement, he's going to live forever. And maybe part of the reason why they don't want to focus too much on it is because they saw the new polling out for Kamala Harris and her job approval at 37%. My God, 37%. Jews do better.
That's pretty low.
Jews do better in Gaza than Kamala Harris is doing right now as far as popularity. That's how bad it is. That was a good joke. Shut up.
Okay, I believe you.
Tim Scott, as I said, he's running for president. He was there. You will recall the just horrible comments made by Sonny Hostin and Joy Behar. Apparently, Tim Scott isn't black enough to understand the black experience in America. And kudos to him. He called Sonny Hostin out to her very awkward and uncomfortable looking face during all of this. She still did the I'm not going to look at anyone directly in the eye. She never looks the guest or any of the people that she's bad mouthing. She never looks them directly in the eye.
One of the things I think about, and one of the reasons why I'm on the show, is because of the comments that were made, frankly, on this show, that the only way for a young African-American kid to be successful in this country is to be the exception and not the rule. That is a dangerous, offensive, disgusting message to send to our young people today, that the only way to succeed is by being the exception.
His answer was very eloquent. It was 4 minutes and something seconds long, so you're going to have to find it yourself to play the full clip. But the worst thing, and I've said this many times on the radio, on TV, and in writing, the worst thing you can do to someone, especially when they're younger, is tell them that they're a victim. And allow them to develop that victim mentality. Because while it is certainly true that from time to time people will be, quote unquote, victims of something, some injustice, some bit of unfairness, the mindset of someone who's a victim is very, very dangerous for the individual who will never accept that maybe they're the reason why the bad thing, whatever it happens to have been, happened. Instead, you say, well, I didn't get that raise or that job. I didn't get that promotion because of my skin color, because of my gender identity, whatever it happens to be. We tell people that constantly. And then, of course, because we've taught people about that so-called systemic racism or systemic whatever-ism or phobia, they believe that and they spread that message. And it stops all of us from understanding that things have progressed in ways that folks never thought was imaginable. We're supposed to just pretend that things haven't gotten better. And for Tim Scott, he doesn't want to be tokenized. That's the other thing that folks on the left do all the time. They tokenize individuals. They tokenized Ketanji Brown Jackson. They tokenized Kamala Harris. When Joe Biden comes out and says, I'm going to get a black woman VP, you're tokenizing that person. Now, let's live in a world in which he picks someone who was actually good at her job and competent. Obviously not Kamala Harris. Let's just live in that fantasy. You then just dismiss all of the reasons why someone would otherwise choose her, having nothing to do with race or gender. You dismiss that because you're telegraphing, I only picked this person because she's a woman and that she's black. You couldn't even say the most qualified. It was always, I'm going to pick a black woman. Could you pick the most qualified black woman? Or are you picking, oh no, Kamala Harris. Asked and answered. But Scott doesn't want to become that token.
I will tell you that if my life is the exception, I can't imagine.
But it is.
But it's not, actually. It's been
114 years.
Yeah, so the fact of the matter is we've had an African-American president, African-American vice president. We've had two African-Americans to be secretaries of the state. In my home city, the police chief is an African-American who's now running for mayor. The head of the Highway Patrol for South Carolina is an African-American.
In
1975, there was about 15% employment in the African-American community for the first time in the history of the country. It's under 5%.
40% homelessness
and 50% of African-Americans
of the folks in our community get 13% of the population.
You had a chance to ask the question. I know that I've watched you on the show that you like people to be deferential and respectful, so I'm going to do the same thing.
That is true.
Well, thanks, Sonny, for acknowledging that. At what point do we say, without having to say that there's no more progress in any regard, at what point do we say it's no longer an exception? What is that number? I'd love to know it. They never tell us, folks who believe this on the left. Sonny Hostin never tells us what that number is. When will she be able to say, okay, you know what? While there's still some progress to be made, we're not this white supremacist culture, a country that can't get rid of its white supremacy past. When will she acknowledge that? Because to Tim Scott's point, and it was made at the time, racist countries, generally speaking, and I'm painting with a broad brush here, but racist countries don't elect a black guy to be president twice, especially when they're running against white guys. Now, again, that's my definition of and my understanding of racists and white supremacists, that they generally don't like the black dude. I could be wrong. Maybe DE&I has infiltrated the KKK and different white supremacist organizations. They sat through seminars, and now all of a sudden they're really down with the diversity, equity, and inclusion aspect. I mean, they'll still outwardly, because they got to be on brand, be abhorrent racists. But internally, they're like, hey, we elected our first black regional vice president. Did you see that? He's the one who's responsible for all those white supremacy tweets. Black guy. Yeah, we're expanding. We don't want to get hit with a lawsuit for racial discrimination in our hiring practices. In what world does she live? The privileged black woman hosting a show, making millions of dollars next to another black woman who is making way more than she was making. At what point do we at least say, okay, maybe the country isn't as racist as we want to pretend it is? 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Monday afternoon. Really do appreciate it. There were two tweets that were sent today, completely disconnected from each other, at least from a brand perspective, that I think deserve some context. The first one came from the New York Post. In fact, the whole story needs to have some added context, but this was the tweet, and it got jumped on by a lot of us in the sort of the conservative Twitter community. Disney Gay Days events go ahead in defiance of DeSantis's Don't Say Gay laws. So the context there makes it less of a story when you realize, number one, there's no such thing as a don't say gay bill. But number two, the bill in which they are referring to as don't say gay has literally nothing to do with Disney. It has nothing to do with adults other than adult educators pushing gender identity issues and pornography, frankly, on children. The so-called don't say gay bill has nothing to do with businesses, period. Not even a little bit. So the framing is very bizarre to me. And even if I were to go with what I'm assuming they intended to mean, which is despite the controversies in the state of Florida with LGBT issues and the fight between Disney and DeSantis, they chose Disney. That also doesn't make any sense. Yes, I presume that they would choose Disney. I don't understand the story. So everyone is just pointing this out, and I haven't seen any, not even an acknowledgement that actually what we meant to say was this, when they clearly, I think, just didn't think it through. Unless the whole idea was, well, because DeSantis is a fascist, he's going to scare away all the gays from showing up. That's the only thing I can think of, which is just stupid. People are still going. You think they're going to cancel their Disneyland adventures?
Probably not, right? Yeah,
I doubt it. Now, another tweet that I think demands some context. Ironically, it came from UN Women, United Nations Women, because they're talking about how we're not supposed to gender stuff. I just thought it was kind of funny that came from the account UN Women. But they tweeted out an image of a bunch of different toys. It has some dolls on it, a teddy bear, a soccer ball, a castle, a teapot, a little wand that actually looks like, I don't know, like a devil, Satan worshiping tool, but I don't think that's what it was intended to be. Dinosaurs, all these different toys. And it says at the top, toys have no gender. Which is also, by the way, just not true, but that's not what they mean. Have you ever seen a doll that is supposed to be a girl?
Yes.
Okay, so then toys have a gender?
Yes.
Okay, that's not actually what they mean. This was their tweet. Let us teach our kids about a world where princesses can build rockets and superheroes can bake cookies. Let's raise a generation that values inclusivity, empathy, and equal opportunities. Are you with us? So I had all sorts of thoughts when I saw that tweet. The first one of which, just thinking about how the world was just destroyed by a supervillain because our superhero was encouraged to go ahead and bake gluten-free chocolate chip cookies instead of taking on Thanos. Just throwing that out there, that maybe, just maybe, the superhero might have something more important and meaningful to do other than bake cookies. That was my first thought.
But they could do that to unwind after saving the world.
No, it feels like we're telling the superhero to be a baker instead of being a superhero. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Number two. Let's talk about the context in which this unbearably silly tweet makes or is important to understand this context. We went from, and I believe this view, generally speaking, we went from telling parents that if a girl wants to play with a truck or a boy wants to play with a Barbie or some traditionally female friendly or female exclusive toy, quote unquote, that you should let them, that it doesn't mean anything. Yeah, boys can wear pink. Girls can wear blue, that kind of thing. Girls can play basketball, and if they want to play football, let them explore that too. And the whole idea of don't allow gender stereotypes to play a role in your kids' natural predilections, that just for some reason your daughter is interested in trucks and your son is interested in baking, whatever. And that, I think, is relatively sound advice. I say relative only in the sense that I remember covering a lot of these stories. We had parents who were basically pushing their boys into buying a Barbie and then posting video of it on Facebook, or at the time it was probably MySpace. It was a while ago. And they were like, see, we are breaking the stereotypes. I'm a good dad. And the little kid is trying to go to the G.I. Joes. It's like, well, Johnny, no. Duncan, get over there. You're going to get that Barbie. Because we don't have toys that have genders in this household, that kind of thing. I think that that's foolish, and that's obviously doing the opposite of what the advice is saying. But now, here's the thinking now on the left. And I'm speaking about the radical left. I'm not talking about all Democrats. Now, if Susie is playing with the truck, the adult in that kid's life, whether we're talking about a parent or educators, they point to that as proof that Susie is actually a boy. That Susie should be more comfortable coming out as transgender. It's weird how we've done that complete reversal from sound advice responding to what I think was probably a harmful position of not just allowing kids to be kids and play with the toys they want to play with, even if it came from a good place. I think there were probably parents who said, oh, well, if I allow my son to play with Barbie, people are going to talk. And ironically, people are going to talk. And now they're saying, well, that means Johnny should be named Joanne. Johnny wants to play with that Barbie because Johnny is truly transgender. It's just a girl stuck in a boy's body. That's where the thinking has gone. And no one wants to just call that out as dangerous because we're supposed to presume that because some kid now all of a sudden says, well, I kind of feel like a girl. We're supposed to just accept that and pretend that parents maybe aren't pushing the kids in that direction or that we're not purposefully at the school level confusing the kids. No one wants to say that. Toys do have a gender. The genders that play with the toys shouldn't matter. But let's also not jump to conclusions because a boy is playing with a Barbie and a girl is playing with a truck. That seems like sound advice. It's the Jason Rant Show.